This is episode number 198 of the Well-Fed Women podcast. Welcome to Well-Fed Women. I'm your co-host, Noelle Tarr, a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer, and I'm joined by my bestie, Stephanie Ruper, author of the best-selling book, Sexy by Nature. On the show, we provide moderately amusing banter, authentic, unfiltered conversations relating to nutrition, fitness, mindset, and body image, and offer empowering advice for women from women. While you're listening, please keep in mind that the information on this podcast is intended to provide helpful and informative material and should not be used to diagnose or treat disease. We are so excited to have you here. So now let's have some fun.
Happy holidays.
Yo.
Yo.
Tis the season.
Such a great season. Although, obviously recording in advance, I am actually listening to Christmas music already.
Yeah, you're the coolest. That's great, everybody. November 2nd.
Thanks for blowing up her spot. Yeah, once November 1st hits, it's on. Like, why not? Why not?
Did you see my Facebook post? I announced the first day of Christmas yesterday.
Oh, congrats. Good. Yep. What were people's general feelings about it?
Well, everybody, there were no haters in response.
Good.
The haters probably just stayed silent, but there were a lot of enthusiastic folks.
That's interesting because I feel like in today's day and age, the haters don't typically stay silent, but maybe they do about that stuff. So yeah, good.
On my Facebook, okay. Like the haters are all very empathetic, kind people. So.
Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah, we started playing it. And it oddly enough, we're having like a warm spell. It's actually been pretty darn chilly. Like it's supposed to be a pretty cold winter here, which I'm very excited about. However, it's like November hit and we're playing these wonderful holiday carols and it's like 70 degrees outside. So wah wah. Okay. But that's what people in the South have to deal with. They have Christmas music in their short sleeves.
So, I know, but they're used to it. Plus,
they are.
Cold weather is terrible, so.
I don't agree. I love it. I love getting all sweatered up.
Oh, I don't know. I, like, since moving to England, I've just gone so soft. It's in the, it's like hovering in the 40s right now, and everybody is saying, I'm dying, it's so cold, and I'm one of them. And it's just in the 40s. In Michigan, I would have been like, no big deal, I'm wearing a miniskirt.
Yeah, yeah, flip-flops, yeah.
Yeah, I'm soft.
You're soft now. What are you going to do? Are you just going to move back to if you move back to San Diego, or actually San Francisco, I hear it's what, the coldest summer or something? What's the phrase?
The phrase, they say Mark Twain said it, but apparently Mark Twain didn't say it, that the coldest winter he ever had was a summer in San Francisco.
It's a summer in San Francisco.
But it's stupid because San Francisco is between 55 and 80 every day all year.
Right.
And usually sunny. So, yeah.
I hear it's the wind. Nice. It's just like kind of a chilly wind. But I'm a fan. I like bundling up. The thing, and I know that this is you with shoes. You have a thing for shoes, correct? I mean, is this still a thing?
Well, usually I only have one or two pair of shoes, but I do have several pairs of stilettos in addition to what I might otherwise call shoes. It's sort of in different camps for me.
My thing, I don't have a thing for shoes. I have a thing for jackets, which I only really recently discovered this because my obsession is just, it's like every year I have to get a new jacket or two. And my husband is the one who calls me out on it. And he's like, do you need another jacket? Yes, I do. So my thing is always jackets. I just can't get enough. And I like being able to wear them. So bring it on, cold weather. Bring it on. It's been a good fall. I've been enjoying it. It's been fun because Notre Dame's doing really well. And it's been fun to actually be involved in this football season with a team that's ranked really well. And we've been able to, we just went out to a game at the Naval Academy and took Stella. And that was super fun. So it was like her first, we did take her to Army Navy when it was in Philly last year and she was 4 months old and it was snowing. which that was, you know, we literally went and like were there for 2 minutes and then left. But this was a lot more fun because we were able to see a lot of people and hang out and let her run around. And she actually found it very entertaining. I think anytime there's a lot of people around, she's in heaven. So it's been a lot of fun. We've been intentionally trying to get out this fall, which last fall we did not do for obvious reasons. And well, maybe not obvious, but you know, we had a small child who didn't love going out or doing anything and would scream a lot. So I feel like I'm finally getting my groove back with like, oh, I get to enjoy the fall things and, you know, run around in the crisp air and watch football. So it's been fun. I've been enjoying it a lot. It's been nice to be in this season of life where I just feel like we have such a better routine and my husband isn't as overworked. Like, we've been super intentional with trying to take him out of all of his obligations so that he has more time to just relax at home and take care of her and be with her, you know, just like without any sort of obligations or, I guess, expectations, like just kind of existing in the same space. I think that's when you learn the most about each other, but also your kid. And so it's been fun. It's been a good season. I feel like we're finding a really good balance. But yay, fall. I'm all for it. And the leaves are gorgeous right now. I just sound like such a fall girl.
You do sound like a fall girl. And we've discussed this at length already. In England, fall doesn't really happen. It just gets rainier and then all the leaves drop off the trees at once.
Oh. So,
yeah, they get kind of a mottled yellow and then they fall down.
Hmm. Is it because of the types of trees that they have there, or is it just...
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Makes sense. That makes sense. So are you following Meghan Markle and her, like, new pregnancy and all that? Or are you kind of, like, keeping up with the...
Yes, I am.
I thought so. What do you think the name's going to be?
I have no idea. I don't know if I've shared this on this podcast yet, but I'm like, so into Meghan and Harry.
Are you really?
I love them.
I was totally joking. Wow.
No, I love them. And I love, it's ironic for me because I've hated all things.
Yes, I know.
You know, popular culture and celebrities my whole life. But, so in my college here at Oxford, we have like a little common room. And one day somebody put up a framed photo of Harry and Meghan. And it, you know, it's like a $4 frame and it looks terrible and cheesy. And I adore it. And every time I walk into that room, I laugh hysterically. And that sort of hooked me. And I don't know, she's 36 and she met a prince, you know, and they seem like they really love each other, you know? And so I'm all for it. It's like authenticity and it's real stuff in a world that feels very fake to me, and also gives a single woman in her 30s some, you know, hope that she's going to marry a prince and ride off into the sunset. Not like I feel like I need to get married, because I don't, but anyway, yes.
If you find the right person, Stephanie, yeah. It is possible. I think it's really cool if you've been watching The Crown or you've seen The Crown on Netflix, which I highly recommend. It's probably my favorite series on Netflix. You get a lot of the history of how, like, what culturally they were going through 50, 60, 70 years ago. And to marry an American is kind of a big deal. And especially when we're talking about just differences in religion and all that kind of stuff. And it's a big deal. It was a big deal for that to be, you know, I guess a part of their culture. And it's of course, everybody here is obsessed with it because of, I think within reason. I wouldn't say people are obsessed as they are in England, but people are much more attracted to this story because she is an American, obviously. So, or she's from the United States. So that's, of course, you know, whatever. You see it on the news a lot, but I think it's a cool story. How wonderful that you're just so excited about it.
I'm all about it.
I'm going to send you all the Meghan Markle updates.
I'm less about babies.
Okay.
I'm all about their story. You know, I'm not obsessed with whatever. It'll be exciting. I'm very much looking forward.
Wonderful. Yay. And also, I just think it's, I wonder, like, names are such a big deal. And you guys know, everybody in this community who's listening, it's hard. It's hard to pick a right name. Do you do a more traditional name that is from you, like a family name? Or do you do something more millennial and modern? And, you know, what are your decisions around that? And of course, like, we know there are some very traditional names in that line. And so, I don't know. Well, it'll be interesting to see which direction that they go. If they're going to have another Charlotte or Elizabeth, or are they going to go, like, who knows, Skylar or something, you know, that's a little bit more Americanized or modern. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Yeah, I bet they're having, like, board meetings about it, you know, with staff and consultants and
I'm sure, actually. Yeah, I'm sure it's, like, a highly researched thing. Okay, let me, I've got a couple announcements. I got one thing that I want to read. We got a very sweet email. We've been getting some emails, more so. Usually I just see a lot of questions, but I've been getting a lot of emails from people who have given us updates and thanked us and that sort of thing. So this isn't necessarily a question, but I just want to read it for the community because I think it will be very helpful and it's just so sweet. So, hi, Noel and Stephanie. I wrote you over a year ago, struggling with figuring out hunger and fullness cues after restrictive dieting and overexercising. I wanted to write with my gratitude for how much your podcast has helped me and a few words of encouragement for the women who write you at the beginning of letting go of restriction and body obsession. I gained back all the weight I had lost, about 15 pounds, not a huge amount, but enough that my body had changed when I lost it. And now it's changed, quote unquote, back. Going back to how I was before was such an anxiety for me for about 2 years. Starting to gain back the weight was very stressful and anxiety producing and even led me to some suicidal moments, a sense that I simply could not possibly tolerate this new body, even though I also couldn't keep up the level of restriction required to keep my body smaller. I had panic attacks in the middle of the night because I couldn't feel my belly or the flesh under my, because I could feel my belly or the flesh under my arms, and being me felt completely intolerable. But the amazing thing that happened, and the thing that I would so want your listeners to know, hear, and believe, is that once I did gain weight, once I really and truly stopped counting calories, and most of all, when I stopped exercising so much so that I wasn't constantly hungry and fighting against that hunger, is that this heavier body eventually started to feel like mine again, and with the anxiety about regaining weight just faded. It required eating and stopping compulsive exercise and letting my body change. Now I can go on vacation for a week and eat sweets and do nothing and have no change in my body. Before, a week off of my restriction would have created major disruption, water retention, weight gain, and stressed out, leap back into lower calories. The weight gain eventually stopped, and I landed at a body that is pretty close to the body I've had for most of my life. The set point really does exist. Basically, I just want to encourage your listeners who are struggling with body image as they try to let go of restrictions and keep trusting the process, and to know that something really does change. It doesn't happen right away, but the awful anxiety, depression, and preoccupation eventually fades away. So many of us have had this experience. Somehow, once you've been eating for a while and you've bought some new clothes and you've looked in the mirror at a new, bigger body for a while, the anxiety and the body hatred fog lifts. I didn't think it would ever disappear from me, but I'm so much more psychologically healthy, so much less anxious, weighing more, and eating what I want. That's it. Just want to tell your listeners to eat and chill out and know that it's simply not worth it to care so much. There is so much more to life. It's easier to see that once you're fed and nourished and buying, it's easier to see that once you're fed and nourished and buying bigger pants. Adding my voice to yours is another note of encouragement to those just starting down this road. Thanks for your wisdom every week. Her name was Cassie.
That's so nice.
That was so wonderful.
Thank you for writing, Cassie.
Yeah, thanks for letting us know. And I think that that is just, I sometimes feel like, Steph, you and I can talk about our experience so much, you know, like we can say like, oh, this is what happened to us and this is where we are now. But sometimes it's just, it's hard. It's still hard for people to put the pieces together and think that this can really be a thing, and that there is a world outside of being so focused on maintaining a specific body size. And I was interviewed earlier this week on a podcast, and I was talking about that exact thing, how I never thought I would actually, like, get out of this. You know, I remember sitting there thinking, like, this is never going to end. Like, how am I ever going to not be thinking about what I'm counting and like obsessively trying to work out. Like I just can't do this. And it was during a time where I was restricting so much that then I would overeat, quote unquote, overeat. Of course, the foods that I was trying to restrict. And it just was this cycle that I could not break. And I always thought the solution to breaking it was to somehow get on some plan and like, you know, oh, well, here's the new diet and I need to do that. And that's going to control all these impulses. And it was like, it was the answer was exactly the opposite, which is what we obviously preach here all the time. But it took a while to find that and to trust that and to let go and to, like she said, trust the process. And it like you can come out of that. There's another side to that. And it's not, you're not like less worthy if you are on the other side of that. You know, I think there's a lot of fears of like, well, if I do gain the weight, then I'm not going to have this power, this worth. And the cool thing is once you get on that other side, you realize that that was a fallacy, you know, that was a facade and you don't have like, you just, you can stop believing in that narrative. So anyway, I thought that was a really, really great, encouraging note, and it makes me so thankful for the work that we get to do. So I thought you'd enjoy that.
Yeah, I thank you. I did.
Wonderful. Okay. Let me quickly mention, I have, I know a lot of you know this, but my nutrition credentials I got through the Nutritional Therapy Association. And they have come back on to sponsor our podcast, which I'm so thankful for. They're a great company and a great organization. They're doing really, really great things. And in my opinion, it is the most comprehensive online-based. They do have multiple options, but it is an online, largely it's an online-based program that is phenomenal. There's a lot of content. There's a lot of learning that happens. There's a lot of reading and a lot of extracurricular stuff that you do. But it's all very educational. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made going through the NTA program. So we're really excited for them to be sponsoring the podcast again. Again, when I say NTA, I say that really quickly. But the NTA is called the Nutritional Therapy Association. And that's what you hear when I say I'm an NTP, I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner. So the NTA trains and certifies nutritional therapy practitioners and consultants, which that's me. I'm an NTP, emphasizing bio-individuality and the range of dietary strategies that support wellness. The NTA emphasizes local, properly prepared, nutrient-dense foods as the key to restoring balance and enhancing the body's ability to heal. The NTA's Nutritional Therapy Practitioner Program and fully online Nutritional Therapy Consultant Program empowers graduates with the education and skills they need to launch a successful, fulfilling career in holistic nutrition. And 4 years ago, I went through the NTA's program, and I truly feel it was the best career decision I ever made. It was really the catalyst for me that allowed me to start my business and create a vision. And one of the things that I love and one of the questions that I get all the time is, does the NTA subscribe to a specific diet? They don't. They're not paleo. They're not Weston A. Price. They're diet neutral, which is great. And it's all about just focusing on quality, which oddly enough is what our book is about too. But, you know, it's about focusing on quality and really meeting one of what they call foundations when you work with clients, which is helping people, you know, create a solid foundation to work from and really focusing on those foundations in order to restore balance in the body. So I thought I knew a lot about nutrition before I went in, just through self study and research. And what I learned is just literally set me up for the rest of my life and my online business, and I'm so thankful for that. So registration is now open for February classes, and you can learn more and save your seat by going to nutritionaltherapy.com. And then don't forget to check out NTA's annual conference, Roots, which happens March 1st to 3rd in Portland, Oregon. It is one of the most empowering and educational holistic nutrition events of the year, and all are welcome. They have some amazing speakers, which I'll start to talk about more, I'm sure, as they launch it. They typically have a ton of people and a lot of great information relating to nutrition and business and just all the things like that are coming up and more recent. Like they really do stay on top of the latest science and research and literature. So, and then if you are interested in the classes, go to Nutritional Therapy Association. You can look at the NTP or the NTC program. I highly recommend both, but I did in particular did the NTP program, which I actually studied for, it was a, just shy of a year. So I did a lot of the work at home and online. And then I actually had to meet 3 times in person at workshops. And then the NTC program is completely online. So great solutions for moms, for busy people. And when you register, if you choose to register for the February classes, feel free to email us or reach out to me on Instagram and I can try to help you answer any other questions. In the referral section, write in well-fed women to let them know that we sent you. And then when you do that, they will actually send me your information and you'll get a free signed copy of Coconuts and Kettlebells. So that could be a little incentive for you to make sure you do that too. So, nutritionaltherapy.com. Okay, are you ready to jump into questions?
Yes.
Question number one is from Danny. Hi, ladies. I've been binge listening to your podcast for the past few months and absolutely love your outlook on health and fitness. I'm 30 years old and have a 3-year-old son. I really want to have another one, but I have not had a period since I got pregnant with him. I breastfed him for about a year and have seen a fertility specialist who said that my eggs look great, but I'm not ovulating. They said that my test results have come back inconclusive, so they can't pinpoint what's going on. I'm very active and was pretty lean when I saw the specialist, so he told me to stop stressing and exercise less. I'm a runner and always have been. Before I got pregnant, I was exercising 2 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now I exercise about an hour a day, sometimes an hour and a half. I have definitely lowered the intensity of my workout, but I still have had not had a period. I do Alexia Clark workouts and run 2 miles 5 days a week. I spin on the weekends, take a HIIT class, but limit the cardio. I have tried acupuncture, chiropractic care, and holistic medicine, but still nothing. My husband travels quite a bit for work, and his schedule is random, so I don't want to go through injections. I have also put on about 12 pounds since seeing this specialist. I eat pretty clean, mainly paleo. I'll have a few glasses of wine on Saturdays. I have even switched jobs to limit stress. I'm not sure what else I can do from here, and I would love your input. Thanks so much, Danielle.
Hi, Danielle. There is one more thing you can do from here, and that would be to not exercise for an hour and a half every day. I know that you lowered the intensity of your workouts, but there's this thing that happens for all of us when we do pretty much anything, which is we normalize our experience and we look at examples of similar people or more extreme people and make us feel like what we're doing is pretty average or fine. And so there was once a time in my life when I was exercising a couple of hours a day, and that was usually in 2 different periods, one in the morning and one at night. And I thought that was pretty chill. I actually thought I could be doing a lot more. And I was comparing myself to people who were, you know, really serious athletes who had specific regimens and coaches and took care of their bodies in very specific ways. And they probably understood that they were doing something pretty intense. And then I took some time, a lot of time, I took many years doing other things, dancing, not working out, not trying to be lean, whatever, I've done many, many different things and looked back and realized that compared to average or compared to even what standards say are quote unquote healthy from what we can tell in the literature, I was doing something really extreme. And so I think something you might want to do is really give yourself a block of time, a few weeks, a month, and say, I'm going to do something radically, radically different. Walk or yoga, and not the intense kind of yoga, not the really hot kind of yoga, yoga. And see if that can give you some perspective and talk to other people about what they do for their exercise. You know, I told a friend the other day that I did a couple hundred burpees or something. And she was like, no. And I totally get that because that's not like a normal, that's not necessarily how like people typically go about fitness or think about that. Like it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. So anyway, talk to some people who aren't obsessed with fitness and find out what they're doing and really, really chill and see if that can give you some perspective on how different what you're doing when you're not exercising is compared to when you are exercising. I really think this is something worth trying because you've tried a lot of different things and I really appreciate all of the things you're trying. It does somewhat remind me of what I did when I was trying to stay lean and fix my polycystic ovarian syndrome and other health problems at the same time. I tried everything to fix the PCOS with different supplements, with sleep, with stress, with the whole list. And then it ended up being the case that I had to do the one thing that I really didn't want to do, which was gain weight. And I'm not saying that gaining weight is necessarily it for you. It could just be the exercise or something else, you know, but this would be an experiment that would have no long-term detriment to your health. In fact, it could be quite good for you and could give you some really important information in terms of what you need. And so I would probably set aside 4 weeks to do a lot less, not just reducing the severity, but maybe not doing it at all and just seeing what happens. And then if it doesn't work, then you can move on to fertility treatments and that sort of thing. But this is really it. If you're looking for some other things, you know, I would recommend maybe vitamin D and making sure that you're getting plenty of carbs and fat, maybe some vitamin E. But those are some things you can throw on top of this, but I really think probably, you know, the advice your doctor gave you was spot on, but I would do it more.
I think first and foremost, within the context of this happening post like your first baby, is a little different. And I think the first thing that you do have to recognize is that your body has gone through an incredible change, both when we're talking about stress, but also when we're talking about hormonally. And it is very hard and sort of, it's not comparable. You cannot compare your body that you have now to the one that you had before pregnancy, because what has happened and what has changed, it cannot even be really calculated. And so when we're talking about what you need to do to move forward to improve your fertility and to make sure that your hormones are balanced and that you are able to ovulate the things that you need to do to improve fertility, we can't keep referencing, or you can't keep referencing what worked the first time. So that's the first and foremost, is you have to be able to recognize the change that happened. My gut is to say, have you gotten any sort of blood work done since you've had your son? My first question, if you're my client, would be, how long have you actually been trying? Because you have to try for an entire year for it to be clinically infertility. And it is very common for people to take around that, or, you know, like around 8 months to get pregnant. So if this is only something you've just recently started in the last few months, you start trying and exploring this, I would say you're going to have to give it some more time. And that's great, because, you know, we do have some suggestions and things that you can do. But moving forward, it seems like your doctor, it might be worth it to explore what it would look like to team up with another doctor, or like another endocrinologist or another functional medicine practitioner, and kind of explore some other options. Because if somebody said, oh, this is inconclusive and we can't pinpoint it, you can always get a second opinion. You can always say, well, have we looked at my thyroid? Which we know hypothyroidism is really common postpartum. You know, have we looked at my thyroid? Have we looked at my stress levels? Have we looked at like a solid hormonal panel and what that looks like? And have you had that interpreted by a holistic practitioner and maybe somebody who can look at things a little bit deeper? Have you looked at your vitamin D levels? You know, have you looked at your magnesium levels? This is all information that you can get, concrete information that you can get. And typically it is covered by insurance. Some of that basic stuff is. So if you can find a primary care physician or a functional medicine practitioner who is covered by your insurance, which they do exist, you can get a lot of that blood work done just so that you get some information and you know where to move forward. Because if it is that you have some like chronic adrenal issues, or your cortisol is really high, or you have some thyroid issues, because my fear is that maybe they pulled just your TSH. And if you probably listened to our episode with Elena, we talked a lot about thyroid issues around pregnancy, postpartum, and all that stuff. And the typical thing that people will pull is TSH, but they don't pull a full comprehensive thyroid panel, which can give us a lot more information. So I think that's my gut reaction, is I would move forward with trying to find somebody who can help you dig a little deeper and see if there is an issue with some of your numbers in your blood work or nutrient deficiencies or whatever. But other than that, I really do think that this, it all starts with shifting your mindset, because there's some sort of underlying behavior or belief that is making you act in a specific way. I don't think, I will say, if you're not a professional athlete or you're not working towards a very specific goal, it's a red flag for me to hear how much you used to do and how much you do now. And it's really easy to say, well, stop doing that. But we know that it's not that easy. And so I, as much as you may try to convince yourself to stop doing it, it's going to take some deeper work. And that is where I think teaming up with a therapist, I'm telling you to go see a lot of people, in other words, but I think some work with a therapist might be really beneficial in this case, because somewhere, somehow, you have this belief that you need to be working out a ton. Now, it may be because that's where you have a lot of anxiety and you have to get it out that way. It may be because you feel like you need to control your body. And so that's, you feel like the only way to do that is to work out a ton. And maybe you feel like, you know, you still need to lose weight after the baby or whatever. Whatever those underlying beliefs are, I think the place to start is to work on those so that you can have a healthy relationship with food and fitness. To hear that you are doing this much training and that you eat clean and it's mostly paleo, which means you're probably not eating a lot of carbohydrate, and that you have a few glasses of wine on Saturdays and that's it. That's like all that you consider to be like, oh, that's the thing that I do that's not paleo. I think you could really benefit from eating more and exercising less, but most importantly, working on your mental and emotional health, because I do think your mental and emotional health plays a big part into this and into fertility, and especially now that you have this pregnancy and you have breastfeeding in, like, thrown in there, it may take a little bit more to kickstart your body into ovulating again. So I understand you don't want to do the injections. I don't blame you for that. I think there's more that you can do in terms of looking for other options. I know you said you've done chiropractic care and you've done acupuncture and you've done all those things, but my question to you would be, okay, what did that look like and how long was that? Was that a year of acupuncture, or did you just go for a few acupuncture sessions and say, well, I'm not pregnant, so I'm going to move on? A lot of these things that we do when we're trying to bring balance back to the body, when we're talking about acupuncture or chiropractic care, whatever, it's something that needs to happen for quite a while. It's something that I would recommend doing for at least 6 months before. And you know, you do want to start to feel better, feel a connection with your acupuncturist, or feel like you're seeing some sort of result. But you really need to do that stuff for at least 6 months to expect to see results from that. And it's really hard to just jump in and then jump out and say, well, that didn't work. And so I don't know if you were doing all of that at once and then you pulled out on all of it, or if you did, you know, chiropractic care for 6 months and then stopped, and you did acupuncture for 6 months and then stopped. But I would recommend too doing it more individually so that you can get a better idea if it's actually helping or not. So that's my thoughts. I mean, I'd love to hear back from you. I commend you that you are doing things to reduce your stress. Like, the fact that you switched jobs to limit stress is huge. Like, that's a huge step forward. And sometimes it does take our body a little bit longer to shift into a non-stressed out state. You know, I think the thing that I'm getting at is you're not going to get immediate results. It's not, and I feel like you might be that kind of person who wants something immediately. You're not going to go into acupuncture and boom, get pregnant. You're not going to switch your job and boom, get pregnant, and all of a sudden, you know, the stress is gone. It takes time, and it definitely takes time as a mom and in this postpartum period where you have a new body that is going through a completely different situation than when it did before you had kids, or you know, how you were able to manage your health before you had kids. So that's it. Question number two is from Amber. Hi, Steph and Noel. First off, pumpkin size. Take it or leave it, but mostly leave it. A couple weeks ago, I noticed a great increase in hair shedding. I'm losing more than 2 times my normal amount of hair in the shower. I gave birth 11 months ago and experienced postpartum hair loss about 3 months after. That lasted a couple weeks, and my hair started growing back. Now the hair loss is back and worse. Not sure if it's possible to be hit with a second wave of postpartum hair loss or if it's something else. Nothing in my diet or exercise routine has changed, and I haven't lost any weight. I did dye my hair for the first time and a long time ago, about 4 weeks before it shedded. She tells us what she used. She found some article that stated some of their ingredients are actually worse than traditional dyes and can be endocrine upsetting. So I thought it could be connected to that, but as I said, this was 4 weeks prior. I also started using makeup remover. I don't think it's that. And she says a few days later is when the hair loss started. I have since stopped using it almost immediately in the same month. 2 weeks after the shedding started, my period started 9 days early, and before that, I experienced 3 days of spotting. My cycles immediately returned to normal when I regained my period about 2 months after giving birth, so this off-cycle has me perplexed. Any ideas on what could be causing this? It's been about 5 weeks now, and I'll soon be bald. Any suggestions on how to rebalance my hormones or slow this hair loss would be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Amber.
Yeah, Amber, it's really interesting. Hair loss is actually a very complex phenomena in field of research. I think there's a few things here with your dye. It is possible, you know, that dyes can affect the quality of your, not just your hair, but your roots and make them more susceptible to, you know, falling out based on other changes that are happening in your body. Unfortunately, I don't know a ton about hair dyes. I've never dyed my hair. So I can only put that out there as a possibility. I recommend looking into it. But other factors that go into it are, yes, hormonal, stress-related, and nutrient deficiency-related. So there are several nutrients that are very important for maintaining healthy hair. Many. Zinc is prominent and important, and also B vitamins, particularly biotin, which is technically a B vitamin, and you can take that as a supplement. And I would recommend playing with those two in particular, although manganese and magnesium and copper and most things, actually, minerals and vitamins are important for your hair. But these importantly, and that means, I think, really dialing in, focusing on everything you can do to make your diet as nutriently, that's a new word, as nutrient enriching as possible. So definitely lots of high quality animal products, including those that have uncommonly eaten things, right? Skin, ligaments, organs, what have you, not just lean chicken breast. You know, you kind of want to go for the whole animal sort of thing. I think that's really important for skin and nail and hair health and all the external stuff that can be really important. And eggs are very nutrient rich and can get you some good B vitamins as well. And then I would consider, you know, playing with different kinds of supplements that you could take. And again, I would probably start with zinc and biotin, but you can do some research and see if there are others that you're really into. I really appreciate how much you're looking at different phenomena that have cropped up in your life and how they might correlate with this. I think that's really smart and it gives you a nice starting point. Of course, I couldn't say one way or another which of these things was necessarily impactful. Of course, you want to keep your stress levels to a minimum. When my hair has fallen out in my life, it has always been when I have been stressed out or under eating, which was probably could have been lack of calories or lack of proper nutrition. That was the case for me. My hair fell out a ton when I was a vegetarian. But of course, here, yes, we can talk a little bit about hormone health, but again, your cycles have regulated and it doesn't seem as though you have you haven't talked about any other symptoms of hormone disruption as opposed to your cycle being a little bit irregular here. And that I would first ask, you know, are you often irregular? Are you ever irregular? Was this the first time? And you have since gone back to normal. So maybe there was one major thing that happened in this brief period of time that caused you an extreme amount of stress or inflammation in your body. You know, maybe you ate something that was really inflammatory. Maybe you had a cold that upset your immune system in your body. Maybe you had a really stressful life event. It seems to me from your language that this was maybe a one-time thing. And that would lead me to guess that maybe these were all sort of a bunch of small factors were triggered by one larger factor, perhaps. Since your cycle has returned to normal, I would tell you to unfortunately keep doing what you're doing and focus on eating really well, supplementing, maybe getting some tests done to see if you have any deficiencies of vitamin, especially in a postpartum period. It's really common. And if you're breastfeeding, of course, it's really common to give away a lot of your nutrients, you know, and come into some nutrient deficiencies that you might not have had before. So I would look into getting tested for that and focus on everything. Maybe take also a vitamin D. I know I mentioned a few already. Maybe also take a D. But it could be really beneficial for you if there's a specific deficiency you have to figure out what it is, instead of just mentioning things to you and it's like throwing darts, you know, with a blindfold on. And it's much better to go in with a targeted approach if you have something that is really pressing to you. So I would get tested. And otherwise, if not, eat super, super enriching and healthy, and perhaps supplement with things such as biotin and zinc that are good for hair. And then things that we commonly see people deficient in, such as vitamin D, maybe A and K as well. Okay, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so postpartum hair loss sucks. There's this really great meme.
Oh, you're losing your hair too.
Oh, yeah. Everybody does. There's this hilarious meme that is, it's like me during pregnancy, and it's like, you know, Beyonce or something, and it's me after pregnancy or, you know, postpartum, and it's like this, like, I don't know, this like gremlin looking witch with just like hair that's like breaking and just gray and disgusting. And that's just our reality. It does stink. And yes, there's quite a bit of shedding, especially in that 3 to 4 months part. Like, again, things you don't know until you have a kid, but you just 3 to 4 months out, all of a sudden your hair just starts just like falling out. It sucks. And like, I have terrible breakage, even more so than I ever had. But when we're talking about hair color, so fun fact, my mom was actually a hairdresser for 20 plus years. So she always did my own hair and like, did our own perms and everything. And so hair color doesn't actually cause hair loss, but what it can do is weaken your hair and make it more brittle and susceptible to damage. Damage is actually something that happens deeper down the shaft. So that would be like, if you feel more hair coming out, it might actually not be coming from your root. It would be coming from like lower down the shaft. So it would just be breaking. So hair color can do that. And I think that you would in particular be especially susceptible to that in this, what I would call, pretty immediate postpartum experience, which is in that first year. I truthfully didn't start to see a lot of turnaround in my overall, like, appearance, my hair health and all that kind of stuff until about a year after. Now, if you are breastfeeding, I hope you are still taking a prenatal. That's always something that is recommended. You need to continue to take a prenatal that has folate, not folic acid, that has folate in it while you're breastfeeding all the way through until you're done. You need to continue to take that. And if you are not, of course, there's a lot of research on this, and this is a huge recommendation, but you need to take vitamin D when you are breastfeeding above 6,000 IUs, ideally with K2 also. That'll make sure your breast milk is sufficient with vitamin D for your little, and also that gives you enough. And so I think those are two absolutes. You absolutely have to be doing that. We don't know anything about your diet. Like, assuming that it is nutrient dense and that you are maybe supplementing with collagen. So I've talked a lot about that from a couple different companies, but the one that I love the most is from Vital Proteins. It's just collagen peptides. And Thrive Market has their own collagen peptides as well from grass-fed cows. It doesn't get any better, and it is super affordable. That's what we order now. And so you can just add a scoop of that. If you're doing oatmeal in the morning, you can mix it in oatmeal. You can mix it in your coffee. I mean, it's super easy to supplement with. So you can drink bone broth and supplement with the collagen. And that should help a little bit. It sucks. It's hard. I would say that the most common cause of that, and the fact that your period changed a little bit during that time, I think it might be a little bit of stress, which isn't a surprise. You know, you can miss a few nights of sleep, be going through some teething situations, have a rough situation at work, and boom, you're like in a stress-topia. So it's hard. It's an ebbs and flow. It ebbs and flows, and yeah, you could have just really been impacted by a stressful moment, and you're going to lose some more hair. Another underlying cause would be hypothyroidism. So that's a big thing that can happen after you have a baby. I would recommend everybody get their thyroid, a full thyroid panel done 3 months after, you know, around 3 months after they have a baby. And sometimes maybe earlier. I don't know. I'll have to see what my functional medicine practitioner decides to do, and I can let everybody know. But I'll have to reference the episode. I'll link to the episode in the show notes. But Elena was very specific about what she got tested through pregnancy and then when she gets her numbers tested again. And because she has Hashimoto's, she gets them tested at 6 weeks. But I think it's something that every woman should do after they have a baby. You need to get a full thyroid panel and have it read by somebody who knows what they're looking at. I just think it's super important. And it might be something that you can easily remedy. So I found that after Stella, I actually am more prone to being like hyper. And I don't know. I just think that's really interesting. And I think it might have played into a little bit of my anxieties and my spinniness in my head. So I would look at that if you have the time and if you have somebody you can team up with. Look at somebody who can talk about your stress levels. Or look at some solid numbers around your stress levels, and also look at your hypothyroid. If you have, just look at a full thyroid panel. Just make sure that that's a quality multivitamin. Ideally, again, if you're breastfeeding a prenatal, and make sure that it has folate. Oh, one thing I did want to mention, that's what I was sitting on, was this happened to me more recently. And I mentioned this to my doc, and I was like, you know, my hair is, I tend to have more of a more dry scalp. And she said, you know, Noelle, that might be a little bit of an imbalance in yeast or something like that on your scalp. And I was like, what? I was like, but it's not dandruff. It's just dryness. And she's like, yeah, no, it could still be that. So I started going back to my apple cider vinegar hair rinse, which I have as a recipe on my blog, which I'll link to in the show notes. But I started going back to that, and almost immediately I noticed a huge change in the dryness in my scalp and then the amount of hair that I was losing. Now, yeah, I'm trying to grow my hair back out. Like, I chopped it off when Stella was like 4 or 5 months old. I'm trying to grow it back out. So like, I started noticing I was losing a lot more hair a few months ago. But once I started doing the apple cider vinegar hair rinses, and it's just, I think the recipe, what I typically do is like 16 ounces and 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, and I rinse that over my head, and I let it sit, and then rinse that out, and then put in a little conditioner on my ends. And once I start doing that, like, the dryness resolves, as does a lot of that hair loss. So try that. I'll link to it in the show notes. Hopefully that's enough information for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Thrive Market, an online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everyone. Thrive Market is like Whole Foods, Amazon Prime, and Costco combined. You can shop for thousands of health foods and natural products, including non-GMO foods, snacks, vitamins, supplements, eco-friendly cleaning supplies, baby and kids items, and so much more at 10 to 50% below retail prices. They can offer these prices because they cut out the middleman and ship products directly to you. They also have their own Thrive Market brand, which offers everything from organic virgin coconut oil to grass-fed collagen peptides, all the way to eco-friendly, chlorine-free disposable diapers, which my daughter wears, by the way, at incredibly affordable prices. To get 25% off your first purchase, head over to thrivemarket.com/wellfedwomen. That's 25% off on top of the discounts you already get on Thrive Market. Head over to thrivemarket.com/wellfedwomen.
And then our last question is from Haley. Hi, gals. Long time listener since day one. Love you both. You've made a life-changing impact on me. I'm a 25-year-old American and now a freelancer, copywriter from home. I travel Europe and live in different places frequently for the last 5 years. I'm in Greece now. Basically, I do not and have never had much stability in my life. I have a huge problem with organizing my work life and my me time. I know it's just a matter of doing it, but sometimes I can't help but reply to emails from an earlier time zone at midnight or on the weekends. I have to stop myself from working. I know that I get overwhelmed and stressed out from working too much. I also have a problem starting my work too late in the day and then working late to the point like I feel like I did nothing for myself except go to the gym. Do you have any productivity tips and tips for making boundaries as a self-employed entrepreneur? Thanks so much, Team Braeburn.
Yes. Yes, I do. What, Braeburn? Really? Really? It's not something you hear very often. It's not a very popular kind of apple, you
know? It isn't. Yeah. No, it's not.
For good reason. They're like the cheap ones all the stores have in case you want cheap ones. Anyway, I'm glad that somebody appreciates them, Haley. Thanks for doing the hard work for us. I have a lot of thoughts. I have too many thoughts on how to organize your time. I have always been self-employed. I've never not been self-employed, and I have always been really productive, actually, and also learned how to be like make time for myself and my friends at the same time. It's very interesting when you have to organize your own time. You end up either getting washed away by uncertainty and chaos, or you become really intentional and really aware of how you're spending your time. I think probably the most important thing for me, and I would recommend for you, is again, being really intentional about what you're doing with your time and making sure that you're using it in a way that you want to. Working is important and good. And I can't really get a sense from this little note of yours whether you're working a lot because you love it or you feel anxious and like you have to. And those are two very different things, and sometimes they overlap, but it's important to know the difference. And if it's the case for you that you're doing it because you love it a lot, great, that's really healthy. Make sure that there are other things that you're including time for other things in your life, because those help maintain balance. But it also seems, you mentioned anxiety, right? It seems like there is also some like the pressure there, right? Like you need to be constantly writing articles or seeking out leads or pitching editors, right? You need to be constantly doing more. And there is, you talked about stability, there's a real lack of stability in your life. And I understand this. And I will tell you that a lot of peace will come to you when you establish stability in the meantime, because that stability can come from a financial stability, you know, knowing that you have resources to fall back on and perhaps stable income streams that can give you a sense of stability, and also doing this for a long time and figuring out how you work and establishing your boundaries. These types of things can bring you a lot of peace in the meantime, because some of those take a long time. Regardless, I would recommend, again, making sure that one thing that is important, I think, is not scheduling your time or your work by the hours, the amount of hours you work, but rather by the tasks that you want to accomplish. And this helps you from overworking and wasting your time. Because so many people, I can't tell you how many people at Oxford, I'm in a sea of people who are supposed to be self-motivated every day. And procrastination is rampant, right? It's the number one thing people are doing. It's not ideal, right? It's kind of wasting your time. If you're feeling drained, go do something that's actually restful and then come back to your work when you have good energy, right? Catch the swings of good energy when you can. When you are really intentional about what you want to achieve and thinking about how to achieve it, then it can help you get started on your work and not procrastinate, right? One of the biggest causes of procrastinating, it's like people often move to procrastinating when the energy input for a task, whether it's in thinking, usually it's in thinking, when your brain has to like work too hard to do something, it will divert its attention to something easier. And so look at your tasks and break them up into smaller pieces and make them easier, and give yourself a to-do list based on task accomplishment and your reasonable interpretation or guess about how much time it's going to take instead of, again, the amount of time you're going to work every day. And if you don't get something done, if something expands and takes longer than you estimated, you just have to be, you just have to be okay with it. And in fact, something you can do is intentionally schedule your life and your time so that you give more time to everything than you actually think it's going to take, because you never know when things are going to come up. And this can really help alleviate your anxiety when these things do come up or when things take longer than you think. So I would intentionally, you know, if you think something could be accomplished in 2 days, give yourself 3.5, give yourself 4. And then when you do accomplish it in 2 days, then you can move on to something else. And I need to circle back to intentionality because I kind of left it hanging. The rest of your life is very important. The exercising is very important. And so I was talking about procrastinating. And what I mean by all of this is making time for people will keep you emotionally stable. And if you are happy, you will do better work. And so you absolutely must be intentional. Make sure that you're spending your time well, doing something restorative, doing something productive, and none of the like wasting your time stuff. And I know that wasting your time stuff is in its own way restful, but then you like put that in the category of rest. And I would definitely do that. There are other ways, of course, to manage your time. But as somebody who is self-employed and attempting to establish themselves in a career that is honestly really hard to break into, then this is how I go about it. I know that I sort of scattered the pieces, but to summarize, I would break tasks into smaller pieces. I would schedule my day by tasks instead of by hours. I would take a very long-term look at what I want to be accomplishing and consistently check in with myself to make sure that I'm on that path. And if I am doing things anxiously that aren't necessarily in that way, then I can wait. You know, you can definitely wait. And then, of course, like me, if you're sending those emails at midnight and you know that it, you know, that another person, maybe a more quote unquote more sane person could wait until morning, I can't wait until morning. I have to do it. And maybe that's okay. And that's something you know about yourself and you build that into the structure of your day. And so in closing, I will also say become acquainted with yourself and your needs and attend to them and build them into the structures of your days and weeks and months. And just be really intentional about it all. It sounds like you are. So I think you're going to do great. And I'm going to stop talking now.
Wonderful. Yeah, I don't have much advice because I don't have this lifestyle. It's like my day is pretty much controlled by all the other things in it. And then when I sit down and work, it's like it's on for 2 hours and then it's off. So I have a whole different way of managing my productivity. But when I was not married and or I was after even as a married woman, it was it still was hard not to like completely wrap everything up in my entire day to be controlled by my work and be reactive instead of proactive. And even when I was working for other people part-time and working for myself, I was very reactive. And that had to shift. I had to be forced to shift once I became a mom to be more proactive and to be ahead of it. And I actually feel like I get more done now, oddly enough, because I do. I have to cut the crap and I have to be efficient. But before I was married, I was always sort of it was part of my personality to be that like I've got to be all that I can be kind of attitude. And then anytime anybody would email me, whether it was a boss or related to anything else, I felt like I needed to respond almost immediately or be working late at night or whatever. And as a type A, I feel like I was kind of wrapping my worth up into my work and my ability to be better than or to do more than somebody else or to be, you know, that on top of it. And I do value the fact that I am a go-getter and I am, you know, I can work from home and be productive. But once we start wrapping our identity up in that, it happens very commonly for people who used to wrap their identity up in how much fitness they did in their body and all that kind of stuff. And so it starts to get redirected into our work and how much we do and all of that. So that was definitely my tendency. And one of the things that really helped was just creating a schedule more so like what I would have to do if I were to have to go into the office. So I would intentionally participate in workout classes, you know, getting up and doing some sort of fitness. It was way better for me. I just felt so much better when I was able to get up and meet people at the gym to work out with at a specific time, get that workout in, kind of enjoy it, enjoy that time, go home, be able to make breakfast, do that stuff. And then it was like, okay, I'm going to work on these tasks and I'm going to work on the hardest stuff first instead of going straight to all the easy things. You know, you're typically especially after you work out, for most people, their most productive time is right after they work out or right after they wake up. And so I would try to do the hardest stuff then and then work my way into the easier things that maybe I could do not so sharp, you know, maybe hitting those slumps. And so I think that it's also really great to have some sort of like evening commitment, whether that be meeting a friend for a drink or a dinner or something like that, just so that you can wrap up, you can, you know, change, shower or whatever, you know, put some makeup on and get out and do something in the evening so that your day has some sort of structure and you are intentionally creating these boundaries or these obligations that allow you, that almost make you sort of pull yourself away. And it's okay to change that and to be like, I'm so sorry, I have to get this done. I have a deadline tomorrow. Can we reschedule for tomorrow? Like, it's not to say that you can't do that, but I do think it's really good to intentionally place things in your day so that it sort of gives it structure and it's things that are for you. Okay. This isn't like things for business. It's things for you where you get up and you do exercise. You go to the gym, you meet a friend or you are meeting a friend for dinner or for drinks or whatever. And so that's kind of my best recommendation, until then. So, all right. Any other things, Stephanie?
No.
Other than you don't like Braeburns. I can't remember if I've ever tried Braeburns. Are they just like really mealy?
Yeah. And they don't really come down on a flavor. I think they just sort of middle around in the middle. They're like a little bit tangy and a little bit sweet.
I just can't. You know, I do really actually like Fuji's. We've been getting those as of late because Pink Ladies aren't really in season. But I do like the Fuji and I don't like Red Delicious. So I just
I haven't had an apple in like 6 months.
That's too bad.
Yeah, lots of grapes though. I'm on the
grape
train.
I am on a grape train too. What color of grape are you?
Always red or black. Never green, ever.
That's such a surprise.
You're being sarcastic, right?
I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, because you hate green apples. Why would you ever like green grapes, which are typically not as sweet?
Yep. Yeah. All the sweet stuff.
I like all of them. I do not discriminate. All right. So for more from Stephanie, go to paleofromwomen.com. For more from me, go to coconutsandkettlebells.com. Be sure to buy our book, Coconuts and Kettlebells. It's available on Amazon and leave a review for the podcast. We'd love to hear what you think. Email us questions. Wellfedwomen@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week.